We're back. Hour two at the races. Rich Migliori joining us. Good morning.
Morning, Steve. You guys getting socked in with snow up there?
No. And I've received a flurry of communiques. In fact, just my father was supposed to go for his COVID shot today, his vaccination, and they can't get out of the driveway. They've got a hatful of inches and in Manchester, in Connecticut. And so,
yeah.
But up here, I think we're only getting six or eight.
Well, we've already had about 10 and plowed out twice. I'm trying to stay ahead of it instead of letting it all come down and then have to dig out, because it sounds like it's going to keep snowing here until tomorrow sometime. But I've been out to the barn. Everybody's taken care of. I'm back in the house with my sweats and my cardigan sweater. So, and I even thought, had enough foresight, I came down and the office is on a different heating zone, so I keep it a little cooler down here if I'm not down here. So I came down and turned up the heat earlier, so I'm all toasty. I'm good.
Well, in fact, this winter weather scenario and what has been a spate of very, low temperatures. We've had some minus 3-4 days in a row of minus temperatures. And I want to get Dr. Alday in this week when it comes to foaling season. And this is a topic we haven't broached in a few years, I think. The dangers, the potential dangers, you got to. It's one thing you got the mares under the lights when you're trying to get them going, but dangerous when you get these cold temperatures and foal delivered, because they can come at any time.
Oh yeah, well it's funny. I've seen some of the pictures posted of foals born in New York State, and like you said, we had these sub-zero days, and they're blanketed, you don't see that unless it's that kind of cold. So. It'd be an interesting conversation with Doc Alday. Good racing this weekend, though, huh?
Without a doubt. And it was consistent.
Nice win. Congratulations.
Thanks so much. One of your favorite horses because of the boxing name.
Yeah, I love the name. I love I enjoy the horse. I got to tell you what. And me and Gary Siaka, we break each other's chops and stuff. But his horses really always look good on the racetrack. I mean, he really turns them out well. Their coats are good. They're carrying good weight. He looked really good, that horse, warming up the other day.
He's he's had the two issues that held him back, starting with the ridgeling issue and as soon as he got back from the ridgeling surgery and got back in shape, early last winter, he promptly ended up, having a throat that needed Dr. Ducharme to do a tie back. And he does make noise, and that seems to unsettle some riders. And in fact, Rich, you could even... I want to talk about riding style in a second, but that's actually an issue you probably can discuss too, because sometimes if a guy or gal's not familiar with a horse and if you don't get informed by connections that the horse makes some noise, how disconcerting is that when you're out there riding?
Well, I think you make a good point, though. If you don't know a particular horse and you don't have that familiarity with ridden them and understand that some horses do make noise or even it almost sounds like they're clearing their throat at one point in the race. They take a big, deep breath and let it all out. You might go, whoa, wait, what's going on here? But, I'm thinking back several horses I rode that had, breathing issues. Stormy Atlantic, he needed a... stay out of his mouth, otherwise he was going to start roaring on you. A couple horses for Rick Violet, and he would use like this special bit, and I can't remember the name, but it was almost like a tongue depressor. Miss Huff and Puff, and she won the Miss Grillo like a good thing, and that day I never had to get in her mouth. And Upon My Soul for Mr. Vanderbilt, he was another one that, they would make noise, but they would run. So I think just knowing that, if you know that, and you go, well, I have confidence in the horse and I have confidence in the trainer, it's not a big deal. But if you get on one for the first time, and particularly a lower level horse, and they start making, you know, that kind of noise, yeah, I mean, just naturally you're going to go, whoa, are we okay here? You know, but, you know, I think a lot of times, as long as a rider's ridden one, it's not an issue.
Before we get into the wider question, explain what you mean to people by, you know, getting in their mouth.
Well, you see some riders, they have to take too much hold of a horse, or they're trying to slow a horse down too much, and they put the bit back up into their mouth. That kind of changes a horse's head position, and they're, you know, even change how their esophagus will be angled. And a horse with a, you know, pre-existing breathing condition, you're going to tend to exasperate that. You're going to you know, tighten up their airway more, or, you know, put it in an angle that is not as natural for them, because they kind of know how to compensate for their breathing issues. So with those kind of horses, you have to try to ride them as lightly through the reins as possible. Use as light a hand, delicate touch as possible. And try not to get in positions where you have to, you know, put the bit in their mouth to change direction or slow them down because you're up on heels. You've got to ride them very thoughtfully to put them in a place where there's continuity in their stride, and you don't have to break any of the momentum, because that's going to change their ability to get the air that, you know, they're having to compensate to get to begin with. Is that well explained?
Sure. Absolutely. And, you know, that whole element, in fact, we've discussed in different, you know, in different frameworks, you know, about horses. Mostly, I think it comes up when we hear about horses that have a sensitive, you know, sensitive mouth. And in fact, famous, and you talk about bits, famously, Funnyside had, you know, had that issue. And you know, he became so much more, you know, tractable, and you know, became so much more of a weapon for Santos when they changed the bit on him because of mouth issues.
Yeah, and I tell you what, he had maybe the toughest mouth of any horse I ever rode in my life. The rankest horse I ever rode in my life was a horse called Offershot for Godolphin. That was rank squared, and worked extensively with him, Rick McTee, Henry Spiller, who trains now in England, who were assistants to Saeed bin Saroor. I mean, he was a handful. But Funnyside, just strength-wise, I mean, it was like hanging a pair of reins and, you know, riveting them to a cement wall. Just pull as hard as you want. He was tough. You know, a horse came to mind as I was talking about horse with breathing issues. I rode a horse for Bill Spahr in California, lower level horse, 10 claimer, 8 claimer. He'd run back and forth in there. Very, very fast, horrible mover. Hit the ground like a ton of bricks, but he had a breathing issue, and he had a loose rein him, just completely throw the reins at him. And that is even more disconcerting for a rider on one that hits the ground so hard and doesn't move as fluidly as you know, most horses. And I won a few races on him in California like that, and people would even question me, like, how can you loose line that guy? But I had so much confidence and faith in Bill Spahr. I mean, you know, talk about a guy that if he said a horse is okay, horse is okay. You know, even if they didn't move great, you know, so having that relationship too with a trainer to have confidence that, hey, you know, we're going to be all right. It's like having a, you know, a pilot, you know, really trust the mechanics that service the plane, right?
Hmm. Yeah. Well, as part of this too, I mentioned that, yeah, there were really on Saturday on display two performances that, you know, the either change of tactics or you know, the designation of how to, you know, how to approach a race has resulted in wins. And American Power's performance in the Toboggan, and now two in a row when sent to the lead, and he sort of has recaptured some of that ability that he showed earlier in his career. But that was, you know, more or less, you know, when he was posting the kinds of figs that he's posted recently, it was coming from off the pace, and here he is, you know, on the lead and was able to, you know, steal that Toboggan on Saturday. And earlier on the card, as mentioned with us, with Kid Chocolate, Manny Franco's now 2 for 2 Rich, and it's not an accident. He's ridden him the exact same way now on turf and then dirt. And granted, this was, you know, this was a weak field of a lot of turf horses running on dirt, you know, just basically biding time through the winter. But hustling him out of the gate, and he then gets into a steady beat. Talk about Kid Chocolate first. He gets into a steady beat, and we've really come to the conclusion he has no business trying to be a closer. He's just a grinder, a one-paced grinder that you got to get involved. Otherwise, you're going to leave him with too much to do since he doesn't have, you know, kind of an explosive turn of foot. But once you get him going, he's going to maintain that pace. And frankly, if you watch the gallop out, Manny had a handful of trying to get him to pull up.
Well, you know, that's the thing, Steve. Most horses that win dirt races, I mean, we're talking, not talking about the upper echelon of racehorses. We're talking about the majority of racehorses really don't have a turn of foot on the dirt. They, you know, it's the races are run where they're progressively going slower, generally speaking. So most horses that, you know, win dirt races do kind of grind. They have the ability to get in a rhythm. And it's so important that people understand there's a certain natural gait that every horse has. Now, some, it's, you know, they're slower. Their natural gait is an eighth and 13. Another, you know, a little better, eighth and 12. You know, get these sprinters. They can throw 11s at you, but they're going to slow down. And then it's who can maintain their most natural gait that is going to be the most successful. And you know, watching Kid Chocolate, perfect position. Why do you want to give away lengths early in a race? Any horse, not, you know, specifically Kid Chocolate. And then have to overcome things, overcome kickback, overcome traffic. If a horse is doing something naturally, let them, don't take it away. Let them do what comes easy to them, and you're going to win so many more races. I see, you know, a kind of a trend, and again, a generalization with younger riders that they tend to not want to go to the lead or overthink it and get in a horse's mouth to slow them down. Why? Take it away from them. Tony Black, the greatest statement of all time, right? It's not how fast you're going. It's how you're going fast. And if a horse is comfortable, he's not using as much energy going a little quicker than if you're trying to slow him down and inhibit that natural gait. And, you know, he was always in a position to win the race. Why? Getting his position going forward and allowing the horse to do what comes naturally to him. And I think part of it is, and I've said this before, I don't think the majority of riders get the same foundation as we used to ride races. I mean, there was such a process, and, you know, contracts are obsolete now, but coming up under a contract was a great thing for me and created, you know, a great sense of timing because you're going to work many horses every day. You know, it got to a point where I was basically the work rider in the barn. I didn't gallop as many horses as I worked. So if there were 10 horses on the work tab in the morning, I was going to be on the majority of them. And your boss would tell you what he wanted. I want you to go off in 13. I want you to come home in 12. I want to, you know, 5 furlongs in 101. And especially the old school horsemen like Mr. DeMauro, they didn't mess around. They gave you an order, and you better nail it, and you learn to nail it. Otherwise, you'd spend a couple of days, you know, on the lead shank, hot walking and cleaning everybody's tack and doing all the menial labor, and that wasn't fun. When you're a kid, you want to get on horses. So you learned what an 8th and 12 for a particular horse especially felt like, what an 8th and 13 felt like. You didn't count. You didn't carry a clock. You found that rhythm, and I just don't think the majority of riders nowadays coming around, the younger guys, work that many horses and have that kind of foundation put into them, so they're not as comfortable knowing exactly how fast or slow they're going. So they tend to want to defer and follow somebody because if they're in front, they're like, am I going too fast? And they become tentative. And I think if they had to work more horses, and even in the mornings, listen, years ago, you had Angel Cordero, George Velasquez, Lafitte Pink Eye. They were out there working horses every morning. Bill Shoemaker. You know, it's changed a little bit, the process. So not only do you have to develop that clock, you have to keep it in tune. You have to keep that clock tuned. And I think that's part of the problem that you see guys reluctant to seize a race, grab a race. And so people know, riding a front runner isn't about, or putting a horse in the lead, isn't about going to the lead and slowing it down as much as possible. That's the biggest mistake you can make, because it allows the horses that have a kick or a turn of foot in the race. So your plan is to put a speed horse on the lead, slow them down so that the horses with a kick are in close proximity, so you're going to outkick the kickers? How is that going to work out for you?
Well, and before we bring in the conversation about American Power, I do have to mention that Declan Carroll is going to join us after Rich, and so back to back jocks, from opposite ends of the career timeline, and Declan has a question. In fact, here I can do it. I can do it sports talk style. Here's a question from Declan in New Orleans. He's asking, did you see my ride yesterday at Sam Houston, and what did you think?
I love this finish, and he knows that one of my things is a rider that could finish. I we talked about that a great deal when I represented him in New York, and I absolutely loved it. I used to tell him, you got to be a mountain lion on a horse's back. A horse is a prey animal. You've got to be the mountain lion and want them to run as fast as they can from you. And he was a mountain lion yesterday.
We're going to talk to him about a big stake win, and was delighted, and of course it actually came, I think Davey's birthday was Saturday, and so it was when I sent a note.
He is a great kid too, by the way. Great kid,
terrific.
Great work ethic, comes from a great family, great horse family. I wish I could have gotten him more and better opportunities, here in New York, but he did win some races for friends like Dave Duggan, who does a terrific job, and Tom Morley. But anytime he has success, I'm happy.
Well, we're looking forward to a visit with Declan about, because Mark Cassie was on with us last week, so I didn't regarding Palazzi, we can hear from Declan and give him the spotlight. Also got a spotlight, as mentioned, the Kendrick Carmouche and what went on with American Power and winning the Toboggan. And it's a very similar scenario, given the horse's style earlier in his career, now a six-year-old, and basically putting him in the race has been terrific. I mean, he's won three straight now, a 40 claimer, and then an optional scenario that was a step up in class, and now a graded stake win at age six.
Yeah, and he gets out. What does he do? He gets him out of the gate. He gets out of his way. He lets him get his position going forward. It's been really a lot of fun watching Kendrick. Now, I got to ride with Kendrick in the twilight of my career, and probably the beginning of his success, not the beginning of his career, but the beginning of his real success, and going down to parks and riding some horses and him shipping in, and knew the guy can ride. Riders know the riders that can ride, even if the guy doesn't get the notoriety or the mounts that some other guys get. The riders know who can really ride and who's a poser, even if they're winning, it is horse racing, but you knew Kendrick could ride, and it's been a process, and him kind of hitting this level and the start he had at the Aqueduct Fall meeting, when a lot of the riders were out of town and it afforded him opportunity, that took his confidence level to another place. And it's so important for athletes, not just jockeys, but any athlete, have confidence. And even though you believe in yourself and your ability, until you ride those kind of horses that he got on and then winning his first grade one and the meet he put together, his confidence hit that other plane, and you could just see it. He's exuding it. It's dripping out of his pores when he leaves the paddock, and he walks up almost every single horse without the pony. I think it's so important to get forward position. If a horse isn't too tough, lead the pony. Let them get a good gallop. Get their feet under them. Get their mind set, focused on what task at hand is. And you can just see he's going out there on every single horse believing he can win. He's always had the physical ability, but the mental part of the game, he has taken it to another level. And it shows on the racetrack. He's going out with a plan. He's making other guys adjust around his plan. And I don't want people to think like he's a send-em kind of rider. He's a very good gate rider. And then he allows horses to get in that natural rhythm. It's not like he's sending horses to lead. That's the only way he wins. He's very versatile, but so important to get your position going forward and put your horses in a position to win. And that's what he's been doing on a consistent basis, day in, day out. It's been a lot of fun. And, you know, yesterday we did a feature on the Fox show. And a great team at NYRA put it together with the African-American riders and talking about Jimmy Wingfield and the African-American cemetery in Lexington. And we were so hoping that Kendrick was going to win it because I was jumping off the set to go down and interview him. And then, you know, I was ready to go. Like, I was going to sprint from the third floor, and then his horse, you know, just flattened out a little bit. But, I think it's just such an important conversation. You know, his success, and you think about, and especially till the turn of the century around there, the success of African-American riders, and then it became more financially lucrative. They kind of got pushed to the side, and they've been, you know, such a backbone, a beating heart of the game, but so much more behind the scenes for the last, you know, how many years. And like my wife Carmela and I were talking about, this exercise rider, African-American gentleman, everybody called him Mr. Joe King. This guy could gallop anything and make it look easy. Horses that would run away with the best exercise riders, he'd get on him and go by with a loose rein, and the horse would be galloping, you know, kind and collected, and he'd laugh, and he'd go, day, got him, you know, like, and he taught us so much about how to actually ride, not ride, be a jockey, but actually ride and communicate with the horses. Like, such a special touch. And there were so many people like that woven through the fabric of my career coming up that, you know, grooms and hot walkers and exercise riders that made such an impact. So I think it's so important that what Kendrick's doing, rising to this level, that hasn't happened in a while. And can't say enough of, like, how good it is to see it come full circle.
Well, no doubt. And he's elevated himself. He's been a consistent story the last, you know, over a year. And the colony that it's always a storyline, you know, who stays in New York over the winter. And, Manny and...
I got to say something, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump and interrupt you, but it's just so funny, that thing about, you know, oh, well, winter riders, and people get labeled, right? Like, Kamat got labeled for years, you know, oh, he's a turf trainer, which he's a horse trainer, you know, it depends. And, like, I chose to stay in New York most of the time because it was just the right thing for me and my family. I could care less about weather. You know, at that time I was impervious to the cold. It was just about, you know, great balance of personal and professional and being able to ride and win races and come home and have dinner with your wife and kids, right? So, but I kind of got that moniker for a while. There were winters in New York, particularly through that period of time. If you go back and look, who was riding here? Angel Cordero, George Velasquez, Eddie Maple, Chris Antley, Jose Santos, Mike Smith, and somehow, you know, then it became like, oh, well, you know, if they didn't go on and go to Florida, but these are the guys I was competing with through winters. And then, you know, it came along, Ramon Dominguez started staying.
Yep.
And again, why? Because it was the right fit for him and his family. You know, there's so many layers to why guys make decisions professionally and personally. So, and then it was like, oh, you know, that was great. And then you go back to this again, like, oh, you know, winter riders. I find that so offensive. And listen, I haven't ridden in 11 years. So, you know, but for these guys that are out there doing it, it is harder to ride in the winter in New York than it is to ride in Florida in the winter. You've got to deal with weather, and you've got to deal with so many different things. And I don't think they get enough credit. And some of the riding I've seen, and particularly, like I said, you know, we're talking about Kendrick. You know what? These guys can go anywhere and win. It's about getting opportunity.
No, and just mentioning the competitive balance that, you know, that seems to be on display. And Eric Cancel and Jose Lascano and Kendrick and Manny, you know, as the...
And Dylan. Dylan's been riding
Dylan Davis.
You know, really well. And, I mean, you know, again, it's, yeah, you know, you're going to have your stars, and it makes more sense to stay close to your horses and your outfit. You know, if you're riding for Chad Brown, do you really want to let someone else get their foot in that door? No, you're going to follow Chad Brown, right? Florent Drew, he went to Oakland. Why did he go to Oakland? He's got to stay with Brad Cox and where his best horses are.
That's right.
And
yeah,
where Monomoy Girl is and these kind of horses. So, you know, if you're in a barn and it dictates that, yes. I mean, I wound up going to Florida because, you know, for a couple winters because John Kimmel, his barn was rolling, and he was like, listen, you're riding all my best horses. You've got to come to Florida, you know. And I'll tell a funny story, and it kind of ties in because, you know, obviously my brother Michael represents Dylan Davis as his agent. Me and Robbie Davis, Dylan's dad, competed against each other. Didn't always get along. We're good friends now, but, you know, when you're competing with people, it's different. And I was riding almost every horse in John's barn, but the year before, Robbie had gotten the mount on a filly called Harpia for Judmont, a Danzig filly that could really, she was a freak. She could fly. So John and I have dinner like November when he's trying to convince me to come to Florida. And I said, John, I like being in New York. I do well here. I can, you know, fly in and win, you know, ride for you. And he's like, no, but you're riding all my horses. So I already had a strategy. I said, well, I'm not riding all your horses. I might be riding everything but your best horse. Harpia, right? I mean, so he kind of mulled it over, and the next day he called me. He says, all right, if you come to Florida, you ride Harpia. And Robbie had won like three in a row on her, or four in a row on her. So I got underneath him and got the mount away from him by saying, well, I'll come if I ride your best horse. So, you know, listen, that's the game. That's, you got to do what you got to do to get on, you know, the right horses. But I remember Robbie being so mad when he picked up the overnight. And I knew the overnight was coming out at Gulfstream. We were both in the same, we had the same valet. And I'm watching him, and he sees it. He tore up the overnight, stormed out. But that's the game. You got to compete.
It's still making you laugh.
I got to be honest with you, especially at that time, because we really were not getting along. Like, we almost got into a fight one day up in the steward's office. And I went downstairs. I said, I'll wait for you downstairs. I went downstairs, took my boots off, put my sneakers on, because you want traction. You don't want to slip, you know. And then he didn't come back until after I went out to ride the first race. So we avoided that conflict.
That's funny about changing the shoes. That's Nick Santagata talks about that too. But make sure you got some traction.
That's who I learned it from. That's who I learned it from.
That was so great. Too funny. it's a good group, and you know, you fold in. Unfortunately, the story about the crazy rule that was on the books in New York that, you know, has got Trevor McCarthy and Katie Bug, having to ride the whole crazy situation. No, it's goofy, but that got too much attention. Trevor McCarthy, having him here, and after a little bit of a shaky start, Vargas has kind of forgotten himself, established as well. And
Vargas is riding some good races. Yeah. Smart. He was second best on Pete's play call, but did what he was supposed to do from the inside. Strong finisher. Pablo Morales rode with him when he was an apprentice, and again towards the end of my career, and the way he's developed and physically, you know, where he's at now, you know, he's another strong finisher. Listen, Trevor McCarthy, that kid folds up on a horse. He looks like a loser on a log, and he's a taller rider like me, like his dad. I mean, he looks so good finishing on his horses this weekend. He won a race for Pat Reynolds, Roddy Valenti's filly.
Yes, Saturday.
Yeah. How good did that kid look finishing on that filly? I mean, I you got to understand, too, I've known these kids since they were kids. I rode with their dads, Dylan and Trevor, you know, and they were running around. I remember, you know, seeing them by the jockey's room or leaving after the races with their families. So I already have an emotional attachment to them. So when I see them and, you know, finish on a horse the way Trevor finished on that filly and ride and improve and develop, I really feel such a great sense of pride in them. Like, I know how hard it is to be a successful rider, and it just makes me proud of them. And, you know, he won the stake yesterday, the Wingfield, Trevor. Yeah. Another great finish, and there's him and Dylan Davis. Again, two kids that I've known since they were babies, you know, coming down there finishing. So it's a lot of fun for me to watch it.
Rich, in addition to, you know, the nice results and the nice performances, I've been holding off this morning to mention it, and I know that tomorrow we'll bring in several guests, including John Parada, to talk about John Forbes. And I'm wondering, you know, for those that have not heard, John Forbes passed away, and a shock to a lot of his friends and you know, and fellow horsemen, and the, you know, long time Jersey, really a stalwart on the Jersey training circuit, and then really the last decade plus moving force and instrumental in the New Jersey THA and representing the horsemen, and then of course what's transpired with Dennis Drazen and everything at Monmouth. And so a really sad piece of news yesterday. Did you ever ride for John?
Yeah, I did. And just a great man, tremendous advocate for horsemen, his fellow horsemen, incredibly smart, just a brilliant mind. You'd have conversations with him and you would walk away going, I never, you know, thought of it in that way or looked at something that way. He had a great intellect and a way of kind of expanding the way, you know, you approach things and the way you looked at things and thought of things. I can't remember the filly's name now, but it was on Florida Derby Day. I think it might have been Monarcos this year. And the first race was like the One Dreamer Stakes on the turf, and I won the stake for him. But, you know, I rode, you know, sporadically for him. He'd ship horses in from New Jersey, and you know, every now and then I'd ride for him. He was very instrumental in Julie Crone's career,
yes.
You know, in Jersey and helping her. You know, I mean, a trainer as respected as him, a horseman as respected as him, starts riding you, it gives you instant credibility. You know, that's Steve DeMar did for me. Here he was coming off you know, a couple of years earlier, winning the Eclipse Award, training Wadjum and Dealey Precious, those kind of horses, and he's riding this 16-year-old kid and put him under contract. That gave me instant credibility. It made people take me serious because a horseman of that level, a horseman of John Forbes' level, giving Julie Crone, you know, a great deal of business was instantly other horsemen are going to pay attention to you. And, you know, I was shocked because I hadn't spoken with John in a while, and you know, obviously we're all getting older. Even though, you know, I guess in my mind, you know, you'll see that person again, and then to hear that, it was pretty shocking news.
Well, I immediately, I mean, thought of I'd heard from John Parada, and John has got John will kind of keynote the conversation that we have tomorrow. But you know, Dennis Drazen and Bobby Colina, I thought about the Dowds, and you know, John said
Pat McBurney was his assistant for a really long
Pat
time,
McBurney.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. By the way, that win came on Larica.
That's who it was, Larika. Yeah, I think we got to walk the dog in the lead and paid a good, pretty good price, if I remember right.
15-1
Yeah, they gave me that one. I was laughing at the half mile ball.
15-1 and in fact, you beat Edgar Prado, Siberian Mirage. Rene Douglas was on Silver Bandana. Bailey was favored on Silver Rail, 2-1 Johnny.
And I came back and won the next race, I think, too.
With the race before. Oh, you mean this on the same day, you mean?
Yeah, I won for a horse for Mary Jo Lohmeyer. Really nice maiden. Copper Canyon, Copper River, something like that.
Like I've said before, it's amazing when you talk to professional athletes and certainly riders fit the bill. Can remember so many of the rides. It's very rare that something comes up and a rider won't immediately recall the horse in question or the race in question. It's amazing. Hockey players and golfers are the same way. In particular to me, hockey players will literally remember shifts from every game they ever played, and golfers remember every shot of their career. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is a funny thing, right? And just remembering horses. Like, I have an easier time remembering horses than I do people. I know that sounds bad, but that's the truth of it.
No, it shouldn't come as a surprise. And you look at, it's funny, you look at who was involved here, too, and it's always funny when you pull up. And this is 20 years ago, March 10th, 2001. Edgar's still riding, Johnny's still riding. It's pretty funny, and among the horsemen, Alan Iwinski had that Siberian Mirage.
Right, so much for Alan. So did Mike McCarthy, Trevor's dad. He was like his go-to guy, and I rode a lot of winners for him here in New York. Iwinski, and used to love his saddle towers. They said, "I win."
I win.
Yeah. it's just so funny. So, like, I haven't ridden in 11 years, right? And I still have dreams about riding. And in particular, I'll be in the jockey's room with the other riders. We've already weighed. We're getting ready to go out. And you're watching the horses on the TV in the paddock, before they call you out. And that happens particularly at Aqueduct wintertime. Like, you'll go out a little later, so you're watching how your horse is acting in the paddock after he's been saddled on the TV. And then they go, riders out, and all the riders are gone, and I'm watching the horses leave the paddock on the TV in the dream, and I can't find the exit out of the jockey's room to get to the paddock, and I wake up in a panic. And it's a recurring dream. Or I'm in traffic, and I can't get to the jockey's room, and I've got to pull weight. And I'm stuck in traffic, and I'm like, I got the heat on in the car, and I'm trying to, sweat in the car so that when I get there, I don't have as much weight to lose. And then I wake up, and I'm usually in a sweat. So it's crazy.
we'll see. We'll see how a young rider, if that has a parallel to the way Declan, the way his, his experience is too, is. At the beginning of a career. That's pretty funny. Rich, before we go to we're getting into a nice swing already. I mentioned this all last week that these two, and particularly the 3-year-old, Derby season prep races, and of course wrapping up with the Eclipse Awards as well on Thursday. Goes a long way toward getting some momentum, and of course you guys have got the. It seems like you guys are right into the swing of things on America's Day at the races.
Yeah, it's fun to be back. I love the people I work with. We have such an incredible team on America's Day at the races. Obviously, in front of the camera, I'm so blessed to work with all of the people I work with there. But behind the scenes, the team we have that put together features and edit and the rundowns and the relentless work they do. Ernie, Mitch, Bobby, Terrence, Jody, Dan, I mean, one after another, Evan, we just like, you know, I'm leaving somebody out, I'm sure, but these people are incredible. So if you see us on air, like usually our shifts are between 2 and 3 hours on air each, right? But the show's 5 to 6 hours. They've worked 10 hours to get that ready. You know, and of course, listen, you do your research and you're prepared when you go on air. But the work they put in far, you know, supersedes anything we do as far as the preparation. They're amazing.
Rich Migliori, everybody. Follow Richard Migliori on Twitter. And you're going to take stock of how much snow has fallen in the last 45 minutes, Rich. And
we'll get out there and start plowing again. I'm looking out from the office window, and it's coming out sideways right now. So the barn's all closed up. I stopped at Wegmans on the way home last night. Carmella did a big shopping yesterday already. So we're in good shape. But and Rangers hockey tonight. So, all right, you know, I'm good. So.
You can throw some logs on the fire and stay around the homestead. And it's early in the week. You don't have to worry about anything until later in the week. And obviously you're not going to you can't go hiking too far for a few days.
Now, I am going to take a walk in the woods behind the house with the dogs a little later. Yeah, Carmelo thinks I'm crazy, but yeah. You know, I got to do something. I got too much energy.
Too much. Unbelievable. Rich, this was great. Thanks very much. And we'll talk to you later in the week.
Look forward to it, Steve. Bye.
Rich Migliori. Let's do this. We're close enough to the top of the hour. Let's take the break here. I promised you a visit with Declan, and Declan Carroll is going to visit and more as we approach top of hour two at the races. Sirius XM. Super Bowl week too, by I should be asking everybody for their Super Bowl picks, especially Dallas. Although Dallas might be a little still grumbling a little bit about the Saints exit. I'm gonna write this down though. Here, Super Bowl SB. What is SB? What, Super Bowl 55? 55? Right? Is that it? I think so. LV, right? Yeah. Back after this at the races, Sirius XM.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents